सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवी भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. I feel very embarrassed to speak in the presence of so many exalted souls and senior Vaishnavas. So I request for their blessings so I can say something worthwhile. And I thank my brother for the nice introduction. Mm-hmm. Actually, my more common name is now Radhika Raman's younger brother. And he used to be Ravi Gupta's younger brother. So I had to get a passport change. So I need to speak on determination. In the earlier session, my brother spoke on the first verse, and then the second and third verses speak about six things that are unfavorable for spiritual life, and six things that are favorable for spiritual life. So, as we have limited time, as we had discussed in the beginning, we won't be able to focus on everything. So, today we'll focus on, right now we'll focus on text number 3. And so I'll read this text for you.
Utsahanishya dharya tattat karma pravartana sangatyaga sato vritte shadvir bhakti prasiddhiti.
Translation: these are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. 1. Being enthusiastic. 2. Endeavoring with confidence. 3. Being patient. 4. Acting according to regulated principles such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaran, hearing, chanting, and remembering. 5. Abandoning the association of non-devotees. And 6. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. So, who remembers the first one? Utsaha. That's enthusiasm. And someone maybe who doesn't have the book, who remembers the second one? Which is endeavoring with confidence, which is another way of saying determination. The Sanskrit word nishchaya means determination or confidence, endeavoring with confidence. Then the third one, patience. And then that's sometimes the hardest one, to be then patient. Fourth one, tat karma pravartana, which means acting according to the regulated principles of hearing and chanting. Number 5, so avoiding the association of non-devotees. So giving up undesirable association. And number 6. Then not acting whimsically, but following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So that's in some ways, also one could say, accepting the association of devotees, following the association of devotees. So these six principles, Rupa Goswami is saying, undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. So again, as we discussed before, the nectar of instruction is so concise. And so every word that Rupa Goswami is mentioning here is of great significance, because he's not wasting any words. I heard that Rupa Goswami himself wrote about 11,000 verses, and then he summarizes 11,000 verses in 11 verses. So each verse is very significant. In other words, nothing is... No word is extra. All six of them together wrote a million verses. So it's the six Goswamis. So the purport is quite long. So I'll read a few selections of it, and then we can discuss that more. Here Srila Prabhupada is saying, he's commenting on enthusiasm. He says, one should accept this opportunity to return home back to Godhead very enthusiastically. Without enthusiasm, one cannot be successful. Even in the mature world, one has to be very enthusiastic in his particular field of activity in order to become successful. A student, businessman, artist, or anyone else who wants success in his line must be enthusiastic. Similarly, one has to be very enthusiastic in devotional service. Enthusiasm means action, but action for whom? The answer is this: one should always act for Krishna. Krishnartha kila cheshta. In all phases of life, one has to perform devotional activities under the direction of the spiritual master in order to attain perfection in bhakti yoga. It is not that one has to confine or narrow one's activities. Krishna is all-pervading. Therefore, nothing is independent of Krishna, as Krishna himself states in the Bhagavad Gita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, one has to make everything favorable for Krishna's service. And then Srila Prabhupada, he defines enthusiasm. So what is enthusiasm? He says, endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is called utsaha, or enthusiasm. The devotees find the correct means by which everything can be utilized in the service of the Lord. Nirbhanda Krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya mucchate. The execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life. And then one more selection. He says, engagement in the devotional service of the Lord is the life and soul of the living entity. It is the desired goal and supreme perfection of human life. One has to become confident about this, and one also has to be confident that all activities other than devotional service, such as mental speculation, fruitive work, or mystic endeavor, will never yield any enduring benefit. Complete confidence in the path of devotional service will enable one to attain his desired goal. But attempting to follow other paths will only succeed in making one restless. In the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, one must be calmly convinced that those who have given up devotional service to engage in severe austerities for other purposes are not purified in their minds despite their advanced austerities, because they have no information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Okay, so we'll stop here. So, it's interesting that in this text, Srila Prabhupada doesn't make a major distinction between enthusiasm and determination, or enthusiasm and confidence. Because if one's enthusiastic about something, then a person will be determined to do it. And if a person is determined, then that requires enthusiasm. So both of these things go hand in hand. And as we'll see, all six of these things, it's difficult to do one without the other. All six of these things, in some ways, go hand in hand. So Srila Prabhupada, in many, many places, in various sections in his books, he describes how determination and enthusiasm is the most important qualification of a successful devotee. That until we're determined and enthusiastic about something, we actually cannot gain perfection in that field. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada, he gives the example here of how if a student wants to be successful, the student needs to be enthusiastic, a businessman needs to be enthusiastic about what they do. And in our day-to-day experience, in our day-to-day life, we experience this and how these things that are important to us, like our education or our job or these things, if we have to do them, we find somewhere or the other to do it. We finagle some way. That's a very wonderful word. We finagle some way to make everything happen and do everything. But when we come to spiritual life, then as soon as it gets a little bit difficult, then we're like, well, what can I do? I don't have any time. And it's very difficult. You know, I have so many responsibilities and I need to take care of all of them. I don't have enough time. And then later on, you know, we may feel a little, we may feel that we're not a little dejected in our spiritual advancement, or we may feel that we're not progressing fast enough. Well, Srila Prabhupada, what he discusses in these sections is that, well, it all depends on our determination. If we take our spiritual activities as seriously as our material activities, as seriously as everything else, then our advancement will be very, very quick. We'll progress very quickly in spiritual activities and attain our desired goal. So determination is a very important quality in the devotee. Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion also says how the only requirement for beginning devotional service is attraction to the service of the Lord. One needs attraction. This is why Krishna is called the all-attractive one. So if we can become attracted by the Lord in some ways, attracted to doing the process, then that by itself becomes a qualification for advancement. And as we make even further advancement, then we become, our qualification for even further advancement becomes intense greed, intense desire to advance in spiritual life. So in our scriptures, there's many, many wonderful examples of devotees who simply by their determination, the devotees attain the Lord, and their peculiar quality in attaining the Lord was their determination. And this is what I want to do in the first part of today's session, is to look at some of the lives of these devotees, and then we can gain insight from their wonderful example, and see what it takes. Because we all have a strong desire to be successful in spiritual life. Right? That's why we come to spiritual life. Those of us, those people who want to seriously take to spiritual life, they come with the idea that they want to be successful. So by looking at some of these examples in our scriptures, we can see that by the example of different devotees, that what determination is needed to attain the Lord. So one wonderful example that comes to mind and that Srila Prabhupada discussed specifically in relation to this verse is the example of Maharaj Prataparudra. Maharaj Prataparudra was a great king, the king of Orissa. And he was the king of Orissa while Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the planet. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed so many wonderful pastimes. So one of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a great scholar, and who by coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya had become a great devotee and a very close associate of the Lord, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was a very great scholar, and therefore he was also the pandit, you could say the priest, of the royal dynasty. So he was a priest of Maharaj Prataparudra. He was like his pandit, his guru, you could say. And so once Maharaj Prataparudra became a devotee of the Lord, once Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became the devotee of the Lord, Maharaj Prataparudra started hearing about the qualities of the Lord and became greatly attracted by these qualities. And after hearing these qualities, developed an intense desire to see the Lord. He was naturally a great devotee, very pious, a great devotee from his past life, and he had this natural attraction to seeing the Lord, and by the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he became, you could say, greatly eager to see the Lord. Now he's the king, you could say, the king of the whole of Orissa, a very great personality, and very influential personality. So the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very happy with this. You know, if the king becomes a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, then the whole of Orissa can change. But this is Maharaj Prataparudra. So they took Maharaj Prataparudra's request to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard this request, then he immediately rejected it. He said, no, I cannot see him, because I am a sannyasi, I'm in the renounced order of life, and for sannyasi to see a pounds and shillings person, a person who's around wealth and opulence, is worse than accepting poison. So he said, I cannot see Maharaj Prataparudra. It is simply not possible. So then some time passed, and Maharaj Prataparudra became even more anxious to see the Lord. Day and night he was thinking of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so again, Maharaj Prataparudra appealed to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because he was a close associate of Lord Chaitanya. And again, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya requested the Lord. He said, please, on our behalf, it's our plea that you kindly see this king. This king is, yes, he's a very opulent person, but he's a very advanced personality. He's a very great personality. And therefore, even though he's engaged in worldly affairs, seeing him is very suitable, it's very, very proper, because he's such a great Vaishnava. And then, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, if you ask me this question one more time, then I'll leave this place. So don't ask me this is, you're requesting me, and it's breaking my heart, but at the same time I cannot see him, and if you keep on asking me, then I'll simply just have to leave and go away from you. So when the devotees heard this, then they said, okay, we won't ask this question anymore. No, we won't ask him. Because that is unbearable. By no means do we want Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to leave. So then, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya goes back and gives this sad news to Maharaj Prataparudra, that no, again, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has rejected your plea, and he said that if we ask him again, then he'll leave. So once Maharaj Prataparudra heard this from the mouth of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he said these very wonderful verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I'll read them now. Prataparudra chhaliye karibe jagat nistar e pratigya kariyachene yavatar. Alas, has Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu incarnated to deliver all kinds of sinners, with the exception of a king named Maharaj Prataparudra. So as you know, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to deliver the most fallen. He delivered Jagai and Madhai, who are murderers, debauchees. And so he's asking, has he come to deliver everyone except for this one king named Prataparudra? Prabhupada writes, this famous song is there, of Narottam Das Thakur, right? Patita pavana hetu tavaya matara musama patita prabhu na paribeyar. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended to reclaim sinners, then one who is the most sinful and low-born is the first candidate for the Lord's association. Maharaj Prataparudra considered himself the most fallen soul because he had to deal with material things constantly and enjoy material profits. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's business was to deliver the most fallen. How then could he reject the king? So he has a very good point. He's saying, yes, I am the most fallen, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came for this purpose. So why is he liberating everyone except for me? Adarsh, in the next verse he says, Adarshaniyannapi nicha jatim samvikshate hantatathapi no mam madekavarjam kripayishyatiti nirniyakim so batatara deva. Alas, how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made his advent, deciding that he would deliver all others with the exception of me. He bestows his merciful glance upon many low-class men who are usually not even to be seen. Maharaj Pratapurda continued, if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is determined not to see me, then I am determined to give up my life if I do not see him. So he's... Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very strong determination. But he's expressing, Maharaj Pratapurda is expressing his determination. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is determined not to see me, then I am determined to give up my life if I do not see him. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he says, a devotee with Maharaj Pratapurda's determination will certainly be victorious in advancing in Krishna consciousness. If I do not receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, my body and my kingdom are certainly useless. Hearing King Pratapurda's determination, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became thoughtful. Indeed, he was very much astonished to see the king's determination. Prabhupada in the purport, he writes how he was very astonished because generally it is very difficult to find this type of a determination in someone who's so opulent, who's so materially well-to-do. Because when our material situation is very comfortable, then our determination for spiritual life, may be less. But when we're in a difficult situation, then we tend to be more determined. But Maharaj Pratapurda, he's a king, he has so much opulence, he has so many wonderful opulences. So to see this determination in him was very shocking. And this showed to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that indeed he is a great soul. Because if Maharaj Pratapurda is so exalted and well-to-do and opulent, and still that determination is there, then there's some great attraction to the Lord. And Maharaj Pratapurda has great attraction towards the Lord. Finally, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, my dear king, do not worry. Because of your firm determination, I am sure that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy will definitely be bestowed upon you. Due to King Pratapurda's firm determination, the Bhattacharya predicted that the king would receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy without fail. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was at that time, who was a spiritual master, Pratapurda, when he saw this, then he said, that now surely you will receive the Lord's mercy without fail. And then he says, as soon as the Bhattacharya, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, as soon as the Bhattacharya saw the king's firm determination, he declared, the Supreme Lord is approached only by pure love. Your love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very deep. Therefore, without a doubt, he will be merciful upon you. Purport. This is the last purport we're going to read. This is very important, so we can listen carefully. Prabhupada says, such determination is the first qualification. As confirmed by Rupa Goswami, Upadeshamrita, verse number 3, the verse that we're on. Utsaha nashyad dhairyat. One must first have firm determination, firm faith. When one engages in devotional service, he must maintain this firm determination. Then Krishna will be pleased with his service. The spiritual master can show the path of devotional service. If the disciple follows the principles rigidly and undeviatingly, he will certainly receive the mercy of Krishna. This is confirmed by the Shastras. So Prabhupada here, he clearly writes that this determination is our first qualification. He says, for advancement in spiritual life. And for one who's engaged in determination, to maintain this determination is our first and foremost quality, necessity, our first and foremost quality. And specifically, Prabhupada saying that this determination manifests with our, you could say, with our determination to follow the principles set down by the previous acharyas. So, how do we express that determination? How do we, express it? Is by fulfilling, or you could say, carrying out the principles put down by the spiritual master, put down by the scriptures. So this is Rupa Goswami's point of tat-tat karma pravartana, that advancement in spiritual life, determination means performing the rules and regulations of the devotional service. And by these rules and regulations, by our determination to fulfill them, we make advancement in our spiritual life. So, for example, one way we can think about practically the way we apply this to our spiritual life is at the time of initiation. Right? At that time, we take certain vows. At that time, we in front of the fire, in front of the spiritual master, we take certain vows. And, of course, we take the vows of the four regulative principles, which we've talked about, and then we take the vow of completing our 16 rounds of japa mala every day, without fail. So, in some ways, in front of the fire, we don't take the vow of, you could say, reading a certain number of scriptural texts every day. We don't take the vow of performing a certain amount of charity. What we take the vow is this chanting of the 16 rounds of mahamantra every day. So therefore, this is something that the devotee is fully determined to do every day. That without fear, happiness or distress, this is something that the devotee will complete without fear. This is something that we will do. Because why? Because we take this vow. We take the vow before the fire, before the spiritual master, to complete this. And our determination is in completing that specific vow, that specific, regulation that we've taken. So, the rules and regulations is where our determination starts from. Because at this point, we don't have that determination where we want to, you could say, directly see the Lord or be in direct contact with the Lord. Prabhupada in one place says that we should be determined that in this life we are going to see Krishna face to face. He says, in this life we must be determined. That this is a determination of the devotee. So this determination, how do we get it from? Where does it come from? It gradually develops. And it develops through satisfying the devotee, satisfying the rules or regulations that we've promised to the spiritual master, to the devotees, like this. So, Srila Prabhupada, for example, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for example, he said that anyone who doesn't chant 64 rounds a day, right, he said, is followed. So you might wonder, well, why did he say this? Why not someone chanting 62 rounds? Like, well, if someone chants 62 rounds a day, why isn't that person following or not following? Why not? Why that number of 64? Why did he say if someone doesn't chant the 64 rounds, that person is following? Why? Because for his disciples, at that time, this was their vow. Right? This was the prescribed number that they had promised to do. So it wasn't exactly 62 or 66. This was the vow that they had made before the fire. And if they fulfill that, then the mercy of the devotee will take that person to the Lord. Will take that person to the Lord. Maybe our chanting may or may not take it. Right? We're not chanting so much, right? We're only chanting a few hours a day. It may or may not. But if we fulfill that thing that we promised, it will take us to the Lord. So then in the same way, for us, Srila Prabhupada said, well, we have to do our 16 rounds. Why? Because this is the vow that we take to do for the Lord. And then if we do that, this is how we please the spiritual master. And then if we make our promise to our spiritual master, then the spiritual master will take us, and we're determined to fulfill that, then the spiritual master will take us to Krishna. Even if we don't ourselves come to that stage of love, our spiritual master will take us. So what we see then in the life of Maharaj Pratapa is the same thing happens in his life. Is that Maharaj Pratapa has taken this, he has this firm determination to see the Lord. But his determination alone doesn't take him to the Lord, taking him directly to the Lord. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he sees that this devotee is so determined, and when he, you could say in some ways, gains the favor of the Bhattacharya, then the Bhattacharya, again, he pleads on behalf of the Lord. And then, after that, not only does that happen, but then later on, another very dear associate of the Lord, Namananda Rai, he comes to Lord to Prataparudra's court. And Maharaj Prataparudra treats him very nicely. And when Ramananda Rai visits Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also speaks very favorably, very wonderfully about the king. So then, once Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he hears this the glories of Maharaj Prataparudra from the Bhattacharya and from Ramananda Rai, then he becomes very pleased. And then he says, okay, now this person, he's worthy of my audience. In other words, then he tells Ramananda Rai that certainly this person will gain Lord Krishna's presence, meaning that he will gain my presence. So our determination, our enthusiasm, should be completely fixed, completely focused. And it should... The strength of our determination is what determines how fast we progress in spiritual life, how successful one will be in spiritual life. But then that determination is expressed through the devotees. It's expressed by endeavoring, like Prabhupada said, endeavoring with intelligence, endeavoring under the guidance of the spiritual masters, under the guidance of the spiritual teachers. So, this type of determination, and then there's many different degrees of determination. So these different levels of determination we find many, many times expressed in the scriptures. And until we come to the point of firm determination, complete determination, when the devotee comes to that level, then the devotee gets the complete mercy of the Lord. So in the Bhagavatam, we also find a very wonderful example of Bharat Maharaj. Where Bharat Maharaj, of course, all of us know about Bharat. This is how India was named, Bharat Varsha. Bharat Maharaj was the greatest king, very Vaishnava king of India, in the history of India. And it's described, we all know about Bharat Maharaj, but what the Bhagavatam describes is how Bharat Maharaj, the devotional activities of Bharat Maharaj, how he renounced the world, how he became a great devotee of the Lord. So the Bhagavatam described that Bharat Maharaj performed his kingly activities very nicely. He was a very successful king. He had a very vast kingdom and was very good at his affairs. He had a kingdom that was like that of the gods. You know, he had everything, a very beautiful palace, many, many opulences, beautiful wife, beautiful children. And when the time came to retire, then he went to the forest. He gave up everything and simply went into the forest. And when he went there, then the way he gave it up was with complete detachment and complete determination to see the Lord. In other words, his determination was such that it was not difficult for him to give it up. His detachment was such that even though he had all these things, similar to Maharaj Pratapa, he gave it up very easily. But then he goes to the forest, and so he goes to the forest, and there he performs great severe austerities. And he engages in the process of devotional service, And the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that he comes to a very, very high level of spiritual life. So high that when he remembers the name of the Lord, when he remembers the activities of the Lord, the tears flow down his eyes. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he describes that he comes to the platform of Bhava. He's so determined, he comes to that high platform. And completely immersed in the service of the Lord, in the worship of the Lord. And once he comes to that platform, then Bharat is basically on the platform of liberation. But what happens is that, well, one time, some of us may know this story, one time he sees a deer is coming through the forest, and he comes and he happens to see this deer. This deer is standing on the banks of the river, and suddenly a lion roars. Right? A lion gives a big roar, and the deer jumps across the river. And as the deer, when it jumps across the river, the deer is pregnant at that time. So the fawn, the little fawn, drops out, falls into the river. And Maharaj Bharat, being naturally a king, naturally a protector, he has a speeding gun, he rushes into the water and saves this little deer. And the mother deer goes on the other side, and out of fear and out of being separated from her child, she feels that she's lost her child, she dies. She goes, loses her life. After that, Maharaj Bharat becomes very, very attached to the deer and this little fawn, because he thinks that he needs to take care of it. So he starts taking care of the little deer and fondling it in different ways and becomes very attached. And what happens is that even though Maharaj Bharat has attained to such a high stage, Maharaj gradually forgets his devotional activities and all of his attention goes toward the deer. And he's completely fixed on this particular deer and the activities of the little deer and of taking care of it. He's trying to protect the deer from all these different animals that might come and kill it or eat it. And so as a result, that attachment becomes very strong. And at the end of his life, Maharaj Bharat remembers the deer and gives up his life. So in his next life, he comes as a deer, as we know the story, he comes back as a deer. He remembers his past life. And he comes as a deer. He greatly regrets his activities. And then in his next life, Bharat Maharaj is born again as a Brahmana with full remembrance of his previous lives. And then what happens in that life? Who knows? He becomes Janapada, right? And he acts like a deaf and dumb person. Right? He's this greatly realized soul, but he acts completely like he's deaf and dumb and why? Why does he act that way? Because he's afraid that, oh, I may get entangled again in this life, right? Again, I may, fall again into this attachment, and again I may sit, and this time I'm going to get out of this material world. This time I'm not going to let it pass through my fingers. He regrets, he thinks back and he says that, alas, I had such an opulent kingdom, which was equivalent to the kingdom of the gods. Even they envied my kingdom. Even all the emperors of the world were thinking I was crazy when I left my kingdom. I had everything that a person would want. And the Bhagavan specifically describes that he left this kingdom and all these things as a person leaves his stool. And after we evacuate, we have no attachment for it. We just walk away from it. We don't think twice. Should I go? Should I leave? Should I not leave? Should I make this decision? No, it's an obvious thing. In his mind, that was the level of detachment. He had attained to that stage. Where, how many of us can do that? Very few of us can actually do that. But he had come to that stage. He could just leave it and go away. But he's thinking that having attained to that stage, then just see my condition. Then this little deer came by, and I became attached to this little deer. How frustrating! It's like going all the way up to the Olympics and missing the gold medal by one point or something like this. going so far and you just miss it by just a little bit. And he said, how is this even possible? How unfortunate that I left all of this wonderful material opulence and then became attached to this little deer. So then Padmanabha says, but in this life, I'm not going to get attached. And this time, I'm going to make it. And so whatever it means, whatever I have to do, even if I have to act deaf and dumb, I'm going to do that because I must attain to the Lord. I must see the Lord in this life. I must attain the audience of the Lord. And therefore, he became even more determined. So now this story is very interesting and very significant. We can draw many points from this. Is how Bharat Maharaj had attained to the platform of Bhava. He had attained to the platform where tears were rolling down his eyes when he was taking the name of the Lord. How many of us can say that we're on that stage? How many people do we even find who may be on that stage? So Bhava is the one stage, you could say, below prema. It's almost basically the highest stage of love of God. Just one below like this. And he had attained to that stage, but even then, his determination wasn't strong enough. Because someone would ask, well, this is like really tricky, you know, it's just like, you make a little, how is it? You do so much devotional service and still that person slips. How can we be sure that we'll be successful? Bharat Maharaj had tears rolling down his eyes and he wasn't successful. So how can I be sure? But Bharat Maharaj even attained that stage, wasn't fully, you could say, convinced about, you could say, the futility of the material world, the determination to attain the Lord. Still, that determination wasn't fully complete. And that resulted in a fall down, right? He fell down for a little bit, just for one lifetime. And then when he came back in the second life, then that determination was so strong. That's the determination Krishna is looking for. That no matter this life, I'm determined to make him back home, back to Godhead. Then that determination, you could say, in some ways became complete. So this also brings up a very interesting point of fall downs. We had talked about how earlier that we'll talk about a little bit about fall downs in this as part of determination. That in our determination, we may have a fall down. Right? We were also talking about in the previous seminar about vows and keeping to the vows. And sometimes, as one person questioned, sometimes we may not be able to keep them, or we may fall down from spiritual life. So, and what is most shocking to us is that sometimes we see very great and advanced souls who fall down from spiritual life. Right. So we know, okay, in our case, well, we're just beginning in spiritual life. If we fall down, well, it's not very surprising. Naturally, it'll be there. But when we see someone very advanced in spiritual life, right, we have such great reverence for that person, we put so much trust in that person, and that person falls down, then suddenly we become very bewildered or disillusioned. Right? We start thinking, oh, well, how can I trust my feelings? You know, I actually felt something when I was in contact with this person. I felt that this person is spiritually advanced. And this person has, you could say, fallen down from spiritual life. How do I know now that anything is genuine? You know, maybe, you know, if those feelings were false, maybe all these devotional feelings that I get are simply, you know, the play of my mind. And maybe this is all false. So the fall down in the process of, you could say, advancement and in the determination of the devotee, maybe a very shocking experience. But what we find is that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find examples. The Bhagavatam gives examples of everything. Right? Prabhupada says that by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam cover to cover, we can understand every psychological situation in the world. Right? So any situation, and it's a practical fact, this is actually what the Bhagavatam is trying to help us do, is that any situation that we find in the world, we can respond to it in a Krishna conscious way. We can respond to it, we can understand the situation, what's going on, and know how to deal with it in the proper way. So I think it's in his introduction, Prabhupada says that anyone who reads this book carefully, cover to cover, can understand every psychological situation in the world. Because the Bhagavatam gives every possible situation. So it gives the examples of very determined devotees, so we can be encouraged in our determination. And it also gives us example, it gives us solace if we see someone slipping from that determination, right? Being unsuccessful, being frustrated with that, why that determination isn't coming. So here in the Bhagavatam, we find the example of the fall down also, such a wonderful example. That what to speak of ourselves or others that we may encounter. Bharata Maharaj, who had attained the platform of Bhava, and had tears falling down his eyes when he said the name of the Lord, Bharata Maharaj had a fall down, right? And could for temporarily, just for, externally, for someone just seeing Bharata Maharaj from an outsider's point, we have a fall down where he's just attached to a little deer. And so, if it's possible for someone on the platform of Bhava, what to speak of ourselves or those who haven't attained to that stage. But then we see, from Bharata Maharaj's perspective, from his side, that how this was just a temporary fall down, in the sense that it was just for one birth. He had full remembrance of the Lord. And what that fall down resulted in was it enhancing or furthering that determination. The next time, I'm not going to make this mistake. So fall down is not necessary. It can also be a pillar of success, right? They say failure is a pillar of success. So the Bhagavatam gives the example of perfect determination, but in spite of this determination, a small fall down, and then that determination becoming even stronger, even becoming more solidified, and then ultimately there being success. But for this success, we see that effort must be there, that determination needs to be there. They say that no pain, no gain. So the determination, the effort is there. And then, even if there is a small fall down, then the devotee sits for some time and then gets back up again. And reading the story, actually, Bharata Maharaj was very, very illuminating for me, because sometimes I myself would ask this question of fall down. Now, how is it possible someone who's so exalted, who's performed so much devotional service, can fall down? And how can we, in spite of this, keep our firm faith in the Lord? In spite of seeing this, that I can never come to the level of this person, and this person fell down. So how can I be convinced that the process, it works, it is real, we do come to the stage of perfection. And then by seeing these examples, we can see, oh no, it's actually, since time immemorial, even millions of years ago, this was happening. And the Bhagavatam is giving us a practical example. So, just to finish, Prabhupada, he talks about this in this purport, about fall down in one's determination. In text 3, he talks about that one may fall down, and he talks about this in the context of determination. He says, devotional service is so pure and perfect that once having begun, one is forcibly dragged to ultimate success. So this is one point, is that Krishna says in the Gita, Neha vikramanashvasi pratyayana vedyate. The one who's started this path, there's no loss for that person. So that's one thing, but then Prabhupada is saying that once we start it, one is forcibly dragged to ultimate success. So this is good news, isn't it? We've started the process, now success is guaranteed. How fast we want it, that's up to our determination. We want it in 3 lifetimes. An example of that is Bharata Maharaj. We want it in 6 months, an example of that is Dhruva Maharaj. His determination, that's why his name was Dhruva. Dhruva meant determined. And Prabhupada said, actually no one can imitate him. He was sort of the best example, you could say, in that. That he was so determined, a 5-year-old boy, that due to his determination in the Lord, he saw the Lord face to face after 6 months. But the process of devotional service is so wonderful that it drags one ultimately to success. Actually, and how fast we want to go is up to our determination. Actually, the whole material world is designed in such a way, Krishna is so merciful, that ultimately it leads us back to Krishna. So there's really nothing for us to worry. So one time, Srila Prabhupada was asked this question by one of his by one disciple. He was asked the question that if the material world is taking us back to Godhead, then why should we be so endeavor so hard for devotional service? I mean, Krishna's made it this way. This is a correctional institution. It's going to take us back to Godhead. So why not kick back and enjoy life and just let the material world work itself, and ultimately we'll get there. And it's interesting, Prabhupada didn't negate his statement. He said, yes, that's true, you're saying. That's very nice logic, he said, very nice. He said, I'll go back to God in this life, and you go back to God in after 1 million lifetimes. No problem. Very good logic. So the key point is this, Prabhupada didn't negate it. Yes, the Lord is merciful. We will all go back to God. Our philosophy, and this is unique, is that every single soul, this is why the material world is perfect, even though there's so many imperfections. This is why God can be perfect, even though there's so many imperfections in the world. Because it's perfect for its purpose. This is a problem that has vexed theologians for many generations. It's why, how, in the place of perfection, if God is all good, how can there be so much evil, so many imperfections in the world? Well, it is perfect, but the material world is perfect, even though there's so many imperfections, because it's perfect for its purpose. Which means that it's so well designed that ultimately every single soul will be returned to the shelter of the Lord. We've come from there, we go back to there, we're here to learn. And so the whole material world in some ways drags people ultimately to success. But specifically saying devotional service is so pure and perfect that once having begun, one is forcibly dragged to ultimate success. Then Prabhupada says, sometimes a person will give up his ordinary material engagements and out of sentiment take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and thus begin the preliminary execution of devotional service. Even if such an immature devotee falls down, there's no loss on his part. On the other hand, what is the gain of one who executes the prescribed duties according to his varna and ashram, but does not take to devotional service? Although a fallen devotee may take his next birth in a low family, his devotional service will nonetheless resume from where it left off. Devotional service is ahaitikya apratihata. It is not the effect of any mundane cause, nor can it be terminated by any mundane cause, or permanently curtailed by any material interruption. Therefore, a devotee should be confident about his engagement and should not be very interested in the activities of karmis, gyanis, and yogis. So, Prabhupada is saying, although a fallen devotee may take his next birth in a low family, his devotional service will nonetheless resume. So, Bharat Maharaj, in his next life, when he comes back as a deer, he's had a fallen birth, you could say. The animal form of life is a species of punishment, you could say, in some ways. So he's coming to that species. But he remembers, because he's so exalted, he remembers his past life. And even as a deer, the Bhagavatam specifically describes, even though in the body of a deer, he cannot make progress in devotional service, but still, he goes to the hermitage of the sages. And he, you know, eats the remnants left by the sages and hangs around the hermitages and the sages. And in that way, you could say, it also, you know, continues to cultivate his spiritual life, continues to progress in his spiritual life. So, Prabhupada saying we resume from where we leave off, and the devotional service, it continues, even if it continues in the animal species of life. Actually, there's many funny stories with animals and devotees. So I just happened to remember one. In South America, there's one temple in Peru, in Chosica. And there, one like this pious deer, there was one pious dog who was around the devotees and who just liked being in the temple. And once in a while this dog would come and be inside the temple premises. So the devotees tried everything to get rid of this dog. You know, sometimes they throw water on it, like this, you know, they just thought it was a dog and they tried to get rid of it. And this dog would just, he would just not leave. So finally they thought the dog's gonna stay here. And the temple in this specific city is located in a certain place, and the ashram, the brahmachari and the brahmacharini ashram, are located a little bit of a distance from the temple. So one time, Mataji was coming in the morning, in early 4:30 in the morning, to attend Mangalarti. And as she was coming, this drunk on the road just sort of started harassing her. And this dog saw this. And as soon as he saw this, he just started chasing and barking at this drunk. And so much so, you know, trying to bite and all this thing, that this drunk just ran away out of complete fear. And in that way, he sort of, you know, this dog protected this devotee. Then after that, what happened after this incident, this dog's service became escorting the Matajis when they came from the province from one place to the other. So every morning he would make it his job, he would go from one place to the other place and the other place back to the original place with them. And he just made it a regular habit. And the devotees were not, they said to him, this is a true story, they were not exaggerating it. And so he had this wonderful service that he was doing, he was very proud of it. And then when the Rath Yatra cart came, when the time for the Rath Yatra came, then he held on to the ropes in the middle of his teeth, but he said for like 15 minutes. He was just like, everyone's doing it. He went there and he started holding on to it. And for 15 minutes, pulled this chariot. And then, I forget how he passed away, how he died, but that was also very special. Then at a certain point, he had a very special passing when he died. The devotees missed him. So these are, you could say, great transcendentalists who have great determination to see the Lord, who may have to take one lifetime or something to get rid of some attachment, but their devotional service continues and it goes on life after life. These qualities of enthusiasm, determination, and perseverance, patience as well, that become very, very great assets in our devotional life, in our devotional service. And when our determination becomes strong, when it becomes very, very strong, in terms of our determination to chant our rounds, to perform the various principles and all these things, then the Lord becomes very merciful to that devotee. So this is all I had to say. Actually, if you have any questions or comments, please.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I have a question. Before that, your presentation was very nice. After lunch, it gave us, made us awake from our sleep. So the question I had is from the determination perspective, considering from the material platform or the material perspective, it's very easy. Mm-hmm. Like say for example, at the end of this year, I need to have this much bank balance.
Right.
I'm able to reconcile on a monthly basis, okay, I've reached 75%, I've reached 80%.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me the motivation,
yeah,
and I try to continue my determination. Okay, I'm going to reach it,
yeah,
in a couple of months.
Right.
But from the spiritual perspective, even though I'm doing my devotional service, after reading from various scriptures, trying to follow it as much as possible, but I don't have any mechanism to measure those growth or anything, so I don't get the motivation.
Mm.
And what happens is, over a period of time, the determination slows down.
Mm.
So how do you reconcile that, and how do you keep up the determination?
Yes, that's a very good question. How do we maintain that determination? And in some ways, where did that determination come from? Right? Where does that determination come from? There's actually this is the other principle that Rupa Goswami in this very same text is talking about. That determination only comes from people who have that determination, associated with people who have that determination. In other words, I can give a personal example of this myself. I personally wasn't so much ever into study. You know, my brother was more intellectual, you know, into studying. I always preferred, you know, singing over studying, or singing over speaking, or like this. So I was more interested in music, all these things. Wasn't very determined about my studies. Then I went to England, you know, I started studying there. I was in that university environment. And then, because after staying in that environment, because I was in that environment, my determination grew. Then suddenly it was just like you know, you're in that environment, and then it becomes, you know, your goals, your ambitions, your competition, everything becomes relative to that environment. Right? You're competing with the other students, so that pushes you to be more determined. Right? You're ambitious to get the best grades, so that makes you determined. So it's the atmosphere that makes us determined. And that atmosphere, I'm not very determined to make money, for example. Right? It's just like money is an issue, but you're not thinking of it so much. But if I was a business major, or if I was around businessmen, then you become very determined to make money. So that's why you see generally, even though, like for example, the caste system, right? It's not by birth, but generally the quality or the nature that the atmosphere that we're in, we develop the same desires. So a doctor's son often becomes a doctor, right? Because the ambition, the determination to do that thing, develops by the people you're around. So when we realize the value of devotees and their association, and when we actually seek them out, and when we actually realize that this is actually very important, that they have something to give us, that we need to take advantage of their time, their put everything aside when the great devotee is visiting, and listen to the devotees and what they have to say, then our determination develops. So the Bhagavatam also says that, he says that Lord Krishna, I forget the sanskrit now, but he cleanses the heart from all material desires from one who has developed the urge to hear his message. Right? So we have so many material desires that stop our determination towards the Lord. Right? We have so many other determinations, right? So many other ambitions in material life that draw us in other directions, and so our determination in spiritual life doesn't start. So how do we get rid of these? Because the reality is, we look inside and say that we do have these desires. We do have these desires that don't seem to go away. And so Krishna is saying that one who has developed the urge to hear my message, to that devotee, to that faithful devotee, I cleanse his heart from all these extra desires. All these material desires. So that comes by association and by hearing Krishna's message. When we understand the value, basically. Determination comes when we understand the value of something. That's a good point. So in some ways, spiritual life begins when we realize that everything is temporary. When we realize, okay, everything is temporary, right? So something's wrong with the world. Now, I don't know what's right, but something seems wrong with this program that I have. This is, you could say, the original awakening. If you see almost all the philosophers in the world, you can see the fundamental, you could say, problem of philosophy. The fundamental theme of our philosophy is time. Right? Philosophy became an issue because some people noticed that there's time. Right? You look back in their lives, like, for example, a philosopher Kant. Why did philosophy exist? How did he start his philosophy? Right? Because he looked around and he thought, well, everything is changing. Right? Everything is flickering. So then, what's the place of permanence? Right? If everything was permanent around you, then that's the world you would be in. Right? Then there's nothing to philosophize about. This is it. This is the world you're in. This is the world you're always going to see. But it was a realization of time that led, you know, it was the first inquiries into philosophy. So the fundamental question of all of philosophy is time. You know, why are we bound by time? And then when we ask that question, okay, everything's temporary, so what's the world of permanence? Why can't I be permanent? Then we get a determination. Okay, let me find the alternative. Or the Prabhupada often says the awareness of suffering. Right? Why is there suffering? Being aware of that, then we become determined to find a way out. Yes, thank you.
I just wanted to comment, or just I heard a different component of the question, which I think would be very nice to get some feedback on. The piece I heard was that in material life, there's lots of things that give us feedback. You know, the example Prabhu used was a bank balance. You know, I can easily check my bank balance and see how I'm doing.
Okay.
But what about our spiritual bank balance? You know, we can't go into CapitalOne.com and figure out what our spiritual bank balance is, right? If we could do that, then that could give us some impetus or realization that, hey, you know, we're doing good or bad. Or so from that perspective, maybe we can shed some light.
Right. One thing that Srila Prabhupada says, we can just start with this, is that he says spiritual life is like eating. He says that when you're full, when you start eating and you gradually start to become full, then no one has to tell you that you're starting to feel full. And no one has to tell you, okay, look, your tummy's coming out now, here's some feedback. You're full, your meal is now complete. No, we experience it ourselves. Right. We experience that, oh, I am making spiritual advancement. I am satisfying my hunger. So, for one thing, it is a personal thing, in the sense that this is also the process of faith, that we start with a little faith, and the more we experience the result, the more we experience the happiness in spiritual life, that faith increases, because we see it working. And then we come to the platform of Nishtha, which is unbreakable faith. So the same idea with determination, the more we see it working in our life, the more we become determined. So so that's one point, is that we will feel the effect of spiritual life. And that will push us to progress more and more. We will find that satisfaction, and that will make us more and more determined. But otherwise, we get that feedback from devotees, I guess, from the spiritual master, especially. That's what Prabhupada is making the point, that under the direction of the spiritual master, that it's a spiritual master's. We think we're working hard enough. We're doing hard enough. You know, we think we've come to our max point. But the spiritual master tells us, no. We can go one more step. You can actually do more. You can actually be more determined. Just like I remember one time I was traveling with my spiritual master, and this one devotee came up to him, and he said, one of his disciples came up to him and he said, I have the service of treasurership, and I'm the temple treasurer and the temple commander. And he says, I'm so busy, these two services are so big that I don't get time to chant my vows. So he's wondering, should I be temple treasurer or should I be temple commander? Which is more important, so I can do that? And then he responded, no, you can be temple treasurer, and you can be temple commander, and you can chant your 16 hours every day. So then he said, no, but the problem is that if I do these two things, I don't get time to chant my 16 hours, so which one should I do, this or should I do this? And he repeated the same thing. He said, no, you can do this and you can just chant 16 hours every day. So sometimes in our mind we think that I can only do this much. You know, this is my limitation. Beyond this is too much. It's too much spiritual life. You know, come on, give me a break. It's like Prabhupada says, as some commentators on Gita, they make this point. They say, Krishna's asking for too much. You know, this is too much. Surrender everything unto me. It's too much of a demand. But no, but Krishna's asking for that. So we have to accept it. You know, this is, he's telling us how far we need to go. So in the same way, the spiritual master, this is the rule, and this is why the spiritual master is so important, is the spiritual master tells us that no, actually, you are capable of this. You can do more. We can struggle more. Yes.
Just to add further on that, I mean, if for example, to take the example of an investment, when you're planning for your retirement, then they say the most important thing is, if you want to retire successfully, then you need to create a long-term plan. You need to start now and say, okay, in this many years, I want to retire and I need this much of an income, and so I have to start investing, you know, $200 or $500 or $1,000 and per month or per year, and I'll get there to that goal. So number one, they keep telling you, you need a plan, right? Number two, you need to make regular investments in that account in order to keep up with that plan. So spiritual life can give us the same feedback, but we have to be willing to do these two things. One is to have a strategy, a plan as to where we're going and where we want to be by this time. And we have to be willing to make regular investments and perhaps increase those investments, because then you call back and they say, another thing they say is call regularly to speak to a financial advisor to review your plan. Okay? So the financial advisor says, look, given the state of the economy, you need to increase your contributions from $200 to $250. And, okay, I better speed up, right? So we go to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master says, you're doing very well, but if you want to get back to God by the end of this life, then you better increase your commitment this much. And if you don't, then, you know, it could take 3 or 4, maybe a million lifetimes by the time you go back. So it's possible to get that feedback, but somehow when it comes to spiritual life, like in our bank balance situation, we check our accounts and we keep track of them regularly and so forth. And in spiritual life, we kind of go, we throw our hands up and say, okay, you know, whatever, it'll just happen one day, it'll be. And we just get in a complacent situation, a rut. I'm going to this temple every Sunday, and this is my service, and this is what I'm doing, and it just kind of keeps going. But if we develop that sense of urgency, then given books like Nectar Devotion, which Prabhupada says is a complete science of devotional service, it's actually very practical. We can chart that this is where I am now, and this is where I need to get to, and this is where I need to go next, and so forth. So it's a matter of developing that urgency of saying, okay, it's been 10 years I've been chanting, and I'm still at this point, so why am I not at this point when Rupa Goswami says that I should be at this point? So let's go check for problems. Perhaps I need to increase my investment on a monthly basis. So something like that. It's also up to us. We can't throw our hands up and say, in spiritual life, everything should happen automatically. Whereas for everything else, I need to make a plan and go forward like that.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? How much time is there? How much time is there?
It's 3:38, so
okay. There's also one question.
Can I
just
comment?
Yes.
You mentioned one thing about, you know, your example, very fortunate having the direct physical association with your spiritual master observing so many things. Just as a comment, when we use the term spiritual master, not everyone is blessed with either the physical presence or even their spiritual master is physically still in the world, or they're going to have that much association. And sometimes someone might feel, well, how do I measure? Because, you know, my spiritual master has 6,000 disciples, and maybe I see him from 100 yards once a year, or, you know, he flies to the airport, you know, or he's physically not here. Some of us have spiritual masters left the planet. So I just would like to kind of broaden that understanding a little bit and feedback from the spiritual master. And adding to your brother's nice comment, there are a couple places in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna lists qualities of Vaishnavas and qualities of spiritually advanced persons. I don't remember which purport it is, but one of those prophets says, we should study these, and these are our means of measuring our advancement. You know, are we becoming humble? Are we becoming forgiving? And et cetera, like that. So that's one point. But on this idea of the spiritual master, also, you know, part of it is getting feedback from the spiritual master when we hear from our initiating spiritual master, or from Prabhupada, who's our founder, Acharya, spiritual master for everybody, or from other advanced devotees. We can also measure against what they're giving us as measuring sticks, how we're doing. And also, we should get feedback from other devotees, how we're doing. You know, we shouldn't just think like, this one person is my spiritual master, and if he's happy, if the rest of the Vaishnava community thinks I'm nuts, once a year I write him a letter and say everything's great, he writes back and says, blessings upon you. You know, in a practical way, we need the feedback from our peers, from our juniors, from our seniors. You know, also that's there. Mm. How am I doing? How can I do better? You know, are you pleased with my service? Are there additional ways I can increase my service? Because, you know, that's a big issue for us in a multiple guru society. Mm. You know, there is these relationships with uncles and aunts and cousins and brothers and sisters. Those are also very, very important things for us to get feedback from.
So thank you very much for that. That we should actually ask for feedback also. That's one way of getting feedback, is we ask for that feedback. Because sometimes devotees are very kind, and they may not state our faults or something, or they may not say anything. We can actually proactively ask for it. And then also your point how and not limit our advice to only one person. We accept many spiritual masters and we have many guides and teachers. Yes, very nice.
Yeah, Roger, like the other question was like, say, I need to win in spiritual perspective, I need to grow in the spiritual perspective. At the same time, looks like I need to compromise on the material side. So if I compromise that, then I'm getting a chance to win here. And if I win here, I'm losing that. So I want to win in both the sides. Is that a way where I can go directly and win materially as well as spiritually?
Yes. I actually asked the same question from another devotee. That is it possible to do both? You know, we want success both ways. So Krishna and Prabhupada, they give us that the method. They say yes, we have at this point we have to be realistic. We have mature desires. We have we want to serve the Lord according to in specific ways that the pure devotee. The very highest path for pure devotional service, whatever the Lord said, he just does. But we have certain desires, and we also have certain ways in which we want to serve the Lord. So Krishna actually encourages this. He says, yes, we should do what's made of our nature. We should do what we like to do. And the way to ultimately make these things one is that we engage our material propensities and our material desires in the service of the Lord. So whatever propensities we have, whatever we want to do, we can't. It's very difficult to ignore those things. But if we do it for the Lord, if we engage in the service of the Lord, then gradually those desires become purified, and our only desire comes to just serve the Lord. Our taste for the service of the Lord increases so much that. We're just happy to do anything that Krishna wants us to do. Now, in the Gita, there's a very, very nice verse which says, Yat karoshi, yadashinashi, yat juhosi, yadasya, yat tapasasi, ponti, yat purusha, madarpanam. Where Krishna said that whatever you do, whatever you eat, wherever you go, do that as an offering to me. So, whatever you do, do that as an offering to me. Now, many people have interpreted this as, you could say, as karma mishra bhakti. In other words, that we're attached to doing what we want to do, and we do that for the service of the Lord. We do that as an offering to the Lord. But the point that we can also make on it is that it's not necessarily the case that just because a person is doing what's their nature for the Lord, that they're doing mixed devotional service. If whatever we're doing, whatever activities and things that we do, if we offer them to the Lord, that too can be pure devotional service. Why? Because Krishna wants us to do what's part of our nature. That's why Krishna's given us that nature. So really, it's our mentality. It's what we're ready for, and what we're willing to do. So, for example, if someone has the desire, you know, to do business, right? To make money. and that that person is, let's say, ordered by the Lord person, that you don't do this, you do something else. Right? You go and make flower gardens. So the devotee on the level of pure devotional service will very, very gladly accept that. You know, will gladly do that. And that's the quality of the person on the path of pure devotional service, that they're completely selfless. They don't even care about having association with the Lord, what to speak of doing a particular activity for the Lord. So if someone is attached to still doing the business, in spite of the fact that the Lord said make flower gardens, then that person is acting on the platform of mixed devotional service. That person still has mature desires and still, but is also trying to spiritualize them. But the reality, the general case that we see is that Krishna generally doesn't give that instruction. If we have a particular quality, he wants us to engage that in Krishna's service. So for most of us who are, let's say, interested in doing business activities, Krishna will say, yes, you do that, because you're very good at it and you do that as a service to me. So to Arjuna, he's saying the same thing. Right? He's saying, this is your nature and I want you to do that for me. And it's very difficult for you to do it, because even though it's your nature to do it, it's still, you know, such a difficult task. But if you do it for me, then I'll be, then I'm very pleased. So our material desires can be purified, but also we can realize that there's not necessarily a conflict between the two. If Prabhupada many times writes, if we lead our life in such a way that everything we do is an offering to the Lord, then our nature will guide us, because we're born with our nature. Krishna says a person is actually driven by their nature. It will guide us, but it will become very quickly pure devotional service. Any other comments on this? Okay, should we?
In the same lines, one of the principles that's mentioned is avoiding association of non-devotees. Mm. How could we practically try to follow that principle in this material step or?
Mm. Avoiding association
of non-devotees. Yes. I mean, we can develop association of devotees more and more.
Right.
But avoiding a association of non-devotees, that's where I think.
That's actually that's the theme planned for my talk in the next session. I'm just afraid if he answers it, then
okay. I think we'll break now and we'll try to start a little earlier to try and catch up schedule. So maybe we'll have about a break till 4:30, and then Radhika Raman Prabhu can resume the seminar. So we'd like to thank Gopal Hari Prabhu for